This is Garrison Grubb interviewing Darren
Glover.
Excuse me, Darren Glover. Today's date is the 11/22. We are conducting a face-to-face interview for Voices Ahead the Curve. To begin with, how did you find out about the University of Dubuque?
Actually, through sports. I had never heard of the University of Dubuque before, and I was sitting in class one day, and a coach came up and got me and said there was a football coach from the University of Dubuque on the telephone and wanted to speak with me. So that's all I heard about that.
How exactly did he pitch the school to you? How did he,
Well, the coach was Don Birmingham. He pitched education. At that time, they had a winning season. I'm not sure you know, if they won that past year, but he did have a winning season. So basically, the program and education.
Okay. I just finished the interview with Fleming, and he informed me about how there was a bit of a racial tension on the football field with did you ever experience any of that?
To a small degree.
To a small degree?
Yes. There were some, maybe newer recruits that I experienced that with. I didn't, with the upperclassmen at the time, I didn't experience anything of that nature with them. Some of the newer recruits I did.
So it always seemed like it was a new crop of freshmen coming in that had kind of still...
Well, it was that group that came in that I had a little tension with, but as far as any other experience with the upperclassmen, I didn't at that time.
Okay. So it was just the class that you came in with that seemed to have this issue?
Yes.
Okay.
On football field.
Okay. So I was just, because he mentioned it as well, because you both were freshmen in 83, correct?
Yes.
Yes, because he mentioned a bit of the tension, because he was explaining as his roots had just come out, and white teammates were very kind of used to dropping the N-bomb on certain players.
Yes, that was true. There has been some time, so a lot of things I may not recall or maybe didn't pay too much attention to back then, but I had my own circle, my own group of guys, and there were some outside of that circle who, in my opinion, just in passing, I never had an issue with, but that could have been the case. I just can't remember at this time. The experience I did have with some of the new recruits coming in, they did drop the N-bomb.
Other than this, how was your experience on the sport teams?
Overall, it wasn't too bad. I think I expected a little bit more. But after my first year, the head coach had left, and we had a new coach come in. But as far as anything racially motivated, a lot of those new group of freshmen, I think they left after the first year. So, I can't think of anything offhand as far as racial tension after that first year on the team that I experienced.
But besides racial tensions, what was the environment for sports itself? Was it something that was held in high regard at the university at that time?
Yes, I believe so.
You believe so?
I mean, there was a lot of recruiting done, and there were a lot of black students from all over that came in, for various sports, either football, basketball, wrestling, and I think it was just an initial culture shock, and a lot didn't come back the second semester, and then very few after the first year.
Geographically speaking, where did a lot of these African Americans come? Were they coming from the North or the South or elsewhere?
A few from Chicago, I believe. There's some from the South, but I wouldn't say the majority are were from the Chicago area or St. Louis, I believe.
So more of this area rather than the southern areas of the nation?
Some from Iowa, yes.
Okay. That's an interesting mix then.
The majority are from Chicago. All
right. Other reason why I mention this is because before that, there was kind of, University of Dubuque was like a mecca for African Americans from southern schools to break into an integrated secondary school.
Yeah.
So to see a shift that it was becoming more like regional in Missouri, Iowa, Illinois, Wisconsin is interesting. So that's why I asked.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of it. I know there was a, before we attended, there was a gap. So I know there was a heavily recruited class that came in, you know, for various sports. You know, as far as the numbers of black students, I know it was well over 20, but I don't know the exact number.
What was the student body's population's reaction to your incoming class?
Mixed reaction. Yes. I mean, not only what the class, the community as well. I can recall several times, either going to the Quick Stop or some of the establishments within walking distance, and it was not uncommon to hear someone yell the N-word from a car as they were driving by. So that was on a regular basis. As far as the students, some ignored you, some gave you a different, funny look. There was a couple that, speak of the N-word.
And these are just typical students that are just on the campus, and this isn't like filled due to the like heightened sense of because of competitiveness on a sporting event.
No, it's just that it's someone different. As far as maybe who they encountered, I don't know. And their life experience at that point, how many minorities they've ever encountered. In fact, my roommate the first year, he was from Wisconsin, came from a small farm. And one of the football coaches, he was recruited to play baseball. So he knew the kid was my roommate. He would always tell me to, relax with him. I'm assuming because he was from a small town in Wisconsin, from a farm. And I was coming in from lunch one day, a group of us, and this is when everyone was coming in to the dorms to get the rooms. And I noticed the door was open, and his entire family was there. And as soon as I walked in, I introduced myself, went to shake his hand, and everyone just could hear a pin drop. They looked up, and some jaws were dropped, and no one else said a word. It was that quiet. So I went in, shook his hand, and introduced myself. Said hello to his parents, and pretty much just walked out because they were in shock.
Did you end up rooming with this gentleman?
I did end up rooming with him.
What was that like?
I did. I think it was more of an adjustment for him, but I didn't have any problems with him, but he did his thing, and I did mine. I was pretty much with some of the football players and things, and he met a small group of kids that he hung out with, and there was really no interaction between us, So.
That's rather strange. It was
very strange.
There really was no rapport between you and your roommate that year. Was that just the one semester, or was that for an entire year?
That was for the entire year. It was cordial, but there was no real rapport or interaction between us. We never, I take that back. One time, we went out to his farm with a group of guys. But, there was nothing negative. I think it was more of a shock, and he was open to it. It's just that we had very little in common, and you know, he did his thing and I did mine.
That's funny. Was the rest of the student body kind of like that, just kind of hold off-ish, but still cordial when it came to actual interaction?
You know, certain guys. I mean, that floor, because they had it, you know, we were in the Cassett, I believe, that first year, and then it's pretty much all the freshmen were. And the majority of people on that floor with me, you know, play football. I mean, there's some with other sports. But for all four, the majority of the group, you know, there was some type of interaction. No one's really standoffish, but some of those that came in at incoming class, you know, you could tell there was some type of animosity because of the skin color, mm-hmm. you know, not because of the person.
Yeah. You know. Fleming also mentioned the underground. It was the kind of hangout spot underneath Peter's Commons.
And you could tell that he wasn't. What do you mean by the underground?
It's the little area that you use to socialize underneath the cafeteria.
Right.
Did you? He mentioned how like it was kind of almost a coming together place because everybody went there to watch Thriller together.
Yes, that's where you know MTV pretty much played 24 hours a day, and that was the meeting place. In between classes or for a little break.
What was it like back then? Was it still kind of cordial there, or was it more segregated, integrated?
Segregated to a degree. I mean, there were people who weren't open, to meeting you.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much like a few times that we were there. It was rarely did I go there alone. You know, see at least one or two other people with me. It was like we were on one side and the other people were on the other side. And majority of the time, no interaction. But if there was someone to walk through who knew you, you know, they would bridge the gap. They'll say hi, either say hello to you from a distance, or come and speak to you. But that was far and few between.
So there really wasn't much interaction going on in the underground. Or what would you guys call it when you attended?
You know, there is a name for it. I just can't recall what it is.
Neither could Fleming.
Yeah, I can't recall what it is.
Okay. But there just really wasn't that much interaction going on at this time, it seems like.
No. It just seems like... Yeah, I don't know. You know, some people were just, afraid or apprehensive or about, crossing that line and introducing themselves mm-hmm. or talk to you. Now, even in the cafeteria, it's almost like it was segregated to a degree. Depending, you know, if there was a large group or if we all sat together, some people would mix in. But it's never, I don't know if people felt uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
sitting at the table or whatever. There's always a period that, we're a large group, five plus. Rarely would someone come to the table and sit to eat with us.
You were also in the ROTC program, correct?
Yes, I was in the ROTC program.
Did you enroll in that in your freshman year, or did you kind of go into it later on?
No, it was actually Sergeant Murray. He recruited myself and my roommate, Kevin Richardson. We initially started off, I think we took a map reading class,
mm-hmm.
and he would always tell us about the program and try to get us in, and eventually it worked. So I think the end of my sophomore year is when I joined up.
Okay. Yeah. Well, was ROTC kind of like athletics when it came to the racial tension, or was it more inclusive since it was military-based?
No, it was inclusive. At that time, we were the satellite unit. The main program was at Platteville, Wisconsin.
Okay.
But we had three instructors at the University of Dubuque, and never a problem as far as an issue, in my opinion. Everyone was helpful, and pretty much you were there to do something. And, you needed something answered. Where it's forthcoming and helpful. The cadre, Major Ayers at the time, she was running the show. Very, I believe she was out of Texas. And, you know, stand up. Never issue with them.
Well, the instructors seemed to be very accepting. And what were the cadets like? Were the cadets the same, or?
Yeah, you know, it's obviously some of the cadets were passing the dorm. You know, so that's just like an extra level of interaction you had with them, and you know, some of the cadets were belong to fraternities that you do, so. You know, you would actually, I mean, you would see them, if they were on your floor or had a room on your floor, so mm-hmm. you would see them majority of the day, so never had an issue.
Okay.
They're always friendly.
Awesome. What about fraternities? Were you involved with a fraternity at all?
I joined a fraternity that was based out of University of Iowa.
Okay.
Phi Beta Sigma, and there were a few of us on campus at that time, and eventually we were able to, the goal was to start a chapter either at our school or at Loras, depending on who had the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being at Loras College. But here now it's the chapter's at University of Utah. So
okay.
It's a good thing.
What was the fraternity like, especially since it was intercollegiate like that? It was UD students and Loras students kind of commingling?
Well, you know, coming in, obviously you heard the rivalry between Loras and UD, so,
mm-hmm.
and then the majority, it's a predominantly black fraternity, but
okay.
I mean that anyone's welcome, you know. And at that time, it was black and Hispanic, and I believe we had a couple of whites over at Loras, mm-hmm. not Loras, Iowa, but the people's mindset, everyone assumed it was just a black fraternity, and that's not true. But I think the rivalry between Loras and UD, you know, was higher than the intermingling. But once everyone got to know one another socially, you know, if you met them out, then kind of came closer together.
Yeah.
And shared similar experiences, you know, with the schools or community.
And these other students were African Americans at Loras predominantly?
Yes.
Were their experiences like the same over at that college, or were they not telling you their experiences?
Oh, yeah. I mean, eventually over time, we became closer as a group. Some of the African American students at UD, and then Clark and Loras as well. You know, not 100% totally, but we would come together at social events or on the weekends and, you know, share similar stories, you know, with institutions and with the community.
Mm.
You
know. With the community at large, like you mentioned, like walking to the simple quick stop, like right next to the university, for. So would kind of perilous people would drop the N-word and whatnot. Well, did you feel welcomed anywhere in the city?
Oh, coming, that was the first time I'd ever experienced anything like that. Well, my high school was multicultural.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much any ethnic group you wanted to find was probably at my high school. So coming from that environment to Iowa and UD, that was a big culture shock, because, you know, it wasn't something that happened within a short period of time. It was throughout the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was either, you know, you get the comments from cars, or you would go to the mall and have people stare at you, and younger kids stare at you like they've never seen someone of color before, you know. So that was a shock. And there were a couple of professors that maybe you couldn't prove, but you felt some type of tension there, you know, with them.
Really?
Yes. For whatever reason, so.
This is actually the first time I'm ever hearing of professors or anybody in the faculty kind of being maybe, I don't, I guess prejudice would be the best for this. Well, I don't even know if it would be prejudice, kind of just...
Well, again, like I said, couldn't prove it, but, I mean, you can use your intuition, you know, when you first come in, and you have a certain feel for environment, you have a feel for people, and, yeah.
Well, what would be one of the things that they would do to kind of give off this, this feeling, or this aura?
You just almost feel like you were ignored, you know. You wouldn't look your way, you know. Wouldn't say anything to you, unless you had a, you know, obviously if there was a question, I can't recall really if you were directly asked a question during a lecture period or anything, but just in general, you know, wouldn't look your way. You know, there was one in particular that, you know, if I had questions afterwards, you know, kind of... not detailed, kind of maybe standoffish in a way, maybe half answer my question.
Really?
Maybe differently. Yeah.
Would this be during a class session, or would this be kind of like during office hours asking questions?
Well, it would be after class.
Yeah. After class? Yeah. So, you would just ask like a typical question for like a follow-up?
Yeah, exactly, the follow-up information or something like that. And, you know, I'll get like a short answer, you know, where, you know, if there was somebody on the students in front of me, you know, their conversation may be a little bit lengthier as far as information they're gathering, and mine would be like a short brief, like in some way I was disturbing them, or, you know. So.
Did this change as you continued to go to there, or was this like your freshman only kind of thing, and it, it kind of ended, or was it just your entire 4 years?
No, I, you know, obviously it depended on the course, but,
okay.
You know, it wasn't, and, you know, I didn't have classes with every professor, obviously, but, you know, that was something. The first year I picked up on, throughout the remaining years, I had great professors, you know, but more than obvious that first year. Well, maybe into the second as well. I can't think of one time. You know, but just from that culture shock of everything, you know, you kind of try to dismiss it as you go on. Because I... we would try to get together as a buffer, you know, just as a support system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where we were meeting at the Saul Butler House when we had it at the time. So kind of, you know, you can't get angry, you know, or to speak of things or try to address it some type of way, you know, within the group. You know, just as a pressure, you know, pressure release, you know, at that time. Because there was nowhere else for us to really to go, you know. And so much time you could spend it in, you know, somebody's room, especially if, you know, they have a, they had a roommate of, you know, different race there, so you didn't want to start, you know, speak your piece and come off in a different way to someone that doesn't understand. So, and yeah, I mean, it's just different things. And there's, you know, I believe I, there's a time I signed up for student ambassadors, you know, for incoming prospects going to college, and they had, I received a call and they had matched me up with two females, I guess, that were coming to, you know, visit the campus. And, you know, we met on Saturdays, I believe, Saturday mornings. So I went to the location where we were going to meet, you know, pick up my group. You know, I knew there was going to be two females, but they told me in advance. And then when I showed up, they said, well, we don't need you anymore. I said, well, I asked a question. I said, why don't you need me? I said, well, they're white, you know, so it's two white females, so I don't know, you know, from the name or something like that, that's what I think was mentioned, they assume from the last name that they're black, but they're not. So I said, well, it doesn't make a difference to me, I'll still show them on campus, and they said, no, tear me away.
Really?
Yes, yes.
And this was done by people who, like...
I was a, whoever coordinated that. I mean, it was faculty. So whoever was coordinating, you know, the campus tours at that time with the, you know, like I said, it was a student ambassador. So.
Wow. Was this always genderly racially charged with, like, black men and white females, or was this kind of just don't let blacks kind of lead the tour for white people?
Well, I have no idea. You know, that was, like I said, that was a surprise to me because it didn't make a difference to who, what color someone is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the primary objective was to, you know, answer their questions and show them around campus. So, like I said to them, it doesn't make a difference who they are. For some reason, they felt maybe they'll be more comfortable with someone white.
So that was the only time you encountered that with the people telling you not to lead tours? Or?
Well, you know, I'm sure whatever mistake was made, it was corrected, so you know, that wouldn't happen again. But yeah. It was an awkward moment.
I'd imagine. Especially with that question, and so blatantly answered it.
Yeah, I remember I just heard that. You know, another thing was the Super Spark for, you know, basketball events.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally there would be, you know, a new student who, well, a different student who would be the Super Spark.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I would always ask to be the Super Spark, and I get turned down.
And I'm guessing back then the mascot didn't have the actual faceplate?
It had the, I don't know if it's still the same faceplate, but it was the pale, you know, the big head with the pale face on it, and yeah.
Would they have been able to see your skin tone at all?
Oh, yeah. Well, they would have seen arms. The arms and legs were exposed. Oh,
okay. So. Yeah, the mascot's not that, it's like a ceramic kind of suit now where the entire person's covered.
Okay, at that time it wasn't, you know, if you think back to the Romans, Spartans, that's, mm-hmm. that's how they look, except for the large headdress.
Okay. So. Yeah, that's still,
yeah.
Be kind of awkward to be told no.
Yeah.
Especially if you have the charisma for to be a person who does it.
Yeah, you know what, I don't know, you know, what the reason behind it. You know, the person I would ask, I never had an issue with. I liked them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't think it was something that maybe his individual judgment or whatever. Maybe it was behind the scenes. Because it seemed like a lot of things happened behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where maybe some professors or like students, you know, peer pressure, maybe they weren't willing to speak with you openly, or some people just didn't care. You know, they didn't mind, you know, any backlash, I guess, or behind the scenes pressure that we wouldn't see. So I thought, well, you know, after over the years, maybe that was the case, but I never had any ill feelings towards the person I asked,
mm-hmm.
at the time, or thought anything of it other than, you know, he cordially will give me a reason, I mean, say no or whatever, but not a detailed answer or, you know, reason why, you know.
Yeah.
Find out I would ask and I would get a no. Or maybe.
Maybe.
But, you know, maybe it was a no.
Yeah.
Because they didn't directly say no.
You mentioned the Saul Butler House. Was there any other place or venue where you could actually kind of present your case or frustrations about how the school was being operated?
No, you know, like just, you know, occasionally we would gather in someone's room, you know. You know, if it was just, if we had the room solely to ourselves, yeah, you know, but you can only fit so many people in the room.
Yeah.
I want to say maybe it's the student union that was underneath the cafeteria. Maybe that was the name of it.
Oh, okay.
But occasionally we would get there, you know, gather there, you know, for one, because they had a little snack bar, and you know, they had a television that was going 24 hours a day. But mainly it was the Saul Butler House. Because it seemed like, you know, the fraternities and sororities that were there, they had a location. You know, we really didn't have anywhere, you know, to come together and gather,
mm-hmm.
or to, you know, speak openly or share experiences and things like that. Or just a, you know, support system. But the Saul Butler House was that, you know, during the weekends we would prepare meals, you know, for us, and then that was a place to go study, it was a place to just to go relax, and then it was taken away. Without reason.
Really? How could you talk about that? Like, just one day, the faculty and the administration just told you no, the house is no longer open?
You know, there was one year that I believe one of the ladies had a key to it, responsible for. We were all responsible for kick, you know, the upkeep of it. But there was one person who was locked, I believe, or just a regular key for the door. But it was always secured. Mm-hmm. One of us had a key for it. And I think, my memory serves me right, I believe it was the sophomore year. We arrive to go, you know, open the door. Well, not me personally, but locks were changed. And then found out it was given to the aviation department. I mean, there was no, in between time, or no decision, you know, if that was a decision they were going to do. No one told anyone, you know, of us. It was a surprise. You go there to use it, and it's locked.
Wow. Yeah. So they didn't even, like, make contact with you guys?
No forewarning whatsoever. And then, you know, try to get information after the fact, which pretty much shut down, you know, as far as a reason why, or a substitute location if you take the house away or work away. You know, there's no answer. And then I believe whatever information related to Saul Butler from the house, I think they took it to the gym, and it was just in the hallway in the trophy case. I think there's maybe like a small dedication, so they removed the house and that dedication or whatever they represented to the gym and a plaque. And there was no one wanted to answer any questions at all. So that was a big deal.
Was there any backlash, or did the students ever like hold a protest about it, or anything? Or?
You know what? I believe so. And I believe we saw outside, you know, contacts to try to help, but it was pretty much we were going against a stone wall. The decision was made. No real reason why, you know, and no conclusion to or substitute for that. So,
Do you remember what year that was?
Like I said, it was probably my sophomore year, going into my sophomore year.
Early 84?
I would say, yeah.
Okay. Look into this. That's insane. And there was no explanation ever given, even...
No explanation, yeah. No explanation. Yeah. So even... I believe the city of Dubuque, or maybe it could have been, well, you know, I think it was the university. They had a civil rights activist, mm-hmm. among other titles, that come in. His name was C.T. Vivian. And he came in. He had a program that he chose two students who were all from UD. It would be a male and a female. African American to sit in his lecture, and he would have prominent business people or clergy from the community within this group, and he would do, you know, this process. And when he came, I believe he spoke upon the fact that the house was taken away.
Huh.
So he was another outside contact to try to help. Without success. Yeah.
And the school had no addressing to what he said at all?
Nope,
the
school did not address one thing. You know, I also have stories when I first came in, as far as going back to the professors. Not from my experience, but I heard a little bit of it. But, you know, they were maybe an issue with one or two, mm-hmm. you know, that to prove the point, you know, the African-American student would submit paperwork that previously a white student had submitted and received like a higher mark on it. And we'll get a lower mark for the same thing, but it was, I think it was pinpointed to a particular professor or more. But that was just as to prove a point that
mm-hmm.
there was an issue with that person. I said, I heard that coming in. Personally, I didn't experience that. I wouldn't know. But I heard that was a little test that was done with that.
This test was conducted by students alone?
Students. Okay. Because they knew they were having an issue with the ticket proposal. So, they submitted paperwork and got a lower grade on it. Then it was the exact same thing that was submitted earlier.
Okay.
At a point in time. Some white student, and we should see a higher grade. Same professor, same exact thing.
So you guys kind of did have like a communication system where you would kind of relay this information towards each other about which professors were kind of biased?
Yes.
Don't be afraid of me, that's great!
Yeah, I wouldn't say, just something in that you would come out when we gather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're having an issue, professor, student, certain thing, it was just an atmosphere to clear your conscience and speak on it, you know, and that those things were shared at those times. You know. But, once they removed the house, it was harder for everyone to gather at one point in time, in one place, I mean. You know, we would, smaller groups, you know, would go to someone's dorm or something like that, but it wouldn't be for the amount of time
mm-hmm.
that we would spend, and it wouldn't be for as open as it was in the house. So
that's insane that they would take that away, especially if it has such a large impact for our community on the campus.
Yeah, exactly. It's
really almost unfathomable today.
Yeah, I know it. University has grown a lot since those days, but it was, like I said, that first year, and even into the sophomore year, I mean, seems like the administration didn't take into account where you had to be aware of things going on, and not just on the campus, but in the community, because they're both intertwined, you just can't segregate yourself and stay on campus without going into the community. But there had to have been that pressure valve. They should have understood that, there was a lot of racial tension in that time, at the time. And you're bringing in black students, or there's no professor there for them to speak with. There's no one of the same race, to go share your problems with. So that gathering place, was just, who knows, it could have been intentional. Who knows? Because that was the spot we would go to.
So that was kind of the refuge for African Americans at that point.
That was the refuge, yes. And then, I believe after my first year, a lot of students didn't come back. Because, a lot of it was, some of the issues they were having. I know with me personally, 100%. I consider myself a strong person at that time, but the initial shock coming in for things that I've never experienced, I've heard racial slurs and everything,
mm-hmm.
but not at that degree or direction as I did when I first came in. So it took time for me to kind of dismiss it, just
mm-hmm.
let it roll off your back. And like I said, I had some students I was close to, and my group. And then there's also their, white students I was close to were pretty friendly and open. I never had a problem with. So I pretty much kind of dismiss this distraction to a degree, not completely, But I recall my freshman year. There was a coach, because originally my father wanted me to go to Grambling, and I was thinking, that second year, I was thinking to myself, I should have listened to him, because this was like a little too much for me, between the campus and the community. And there was a coach, Mr. Anderson, the defensive coordinator and baseball coach. He was one of them. I told you mm-hmm. that. Spoke to me about that student coming in, my roommate. But he pulled me aside. And he had a heart-to-heart talk with me. You know, he reminds me of Mickey from Rocky. He just had that raspy voice. And, you know, he said that figure to himself. And he gave me a heart-to-heart talk about, you know, the tension, because he was aware of it, tension on the campus and in the community. You know, there's just the relation, black and white, and kind of helped me decide to stick it out.
Really?
Yes.
How did you manage that, considering it seems like it would have been a tough thing to try and convince somebody at that point?
You know, for me, coming in, one of the things that attracted me to the university was small classrooms, mm-hmm. like that type of setting. And in my mind, I figured, since I had friends going to, you know, larger schools, I was in Illinois. I was actually recruited to go to Illinois State and Western for football, which I chose not to do. But I just thought it was a quiet community. You know, school was nice and small. Classrooms are small, because that's one of the things I think the coach had emphasized on mm-hmm. the visit. So I figured, no distractions. Get my work done, you know, because I heard some horror stories from friends that I've known that went to larger schools.
Mm-hmm.
But I never expected the racial tension side of it that I experienced. But I've never been a person to quit on anything, you know, unless, you know, I have a reason, force my hand to, or a legitimate reason to. But that was, I mean, after I spoke with him, you know, I decided to stay there.
Okay. Well, this is coming towards the late 80s. We've been your junior and senior year. Do you remember if the pack was still around, or was it closing at this point?
Cause this, the what?
The pack. It was one of the leading job suppliers in the city at that point.
Oh, the DBU pack?
Yes.
Yeah, I believe that was closed, I believe. Either in the process of closing or closed towards the later years.
And were the community's reaction to you as, like, this economic downfall started to come to reality, did the reaction get worse once it started to happen?
No. I wasn't, you know, I didn't keep track as far as economics of the pack closing.
Mm-hmm.
For me and friends I associate with, that experience for me, you know, there was no correlation to us between the pack closing and our experiences. It just remained the same, you know. And, you know, towards those in the my time there, you know, there was another professor. There was an incident that I still remember too, because when I graduated, I lived there for a while,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I worked at the university as a systems operator for a time, and then I worked at Hillcrest before I had to go and meet my military obligation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was just a little gap in between. And the professor, because I had spoke with him after I left too, as far as he was in charge of the computer science program, you know. And he's actually the one I approached to get hired to work for the university. And I was there for, you know, a good period of time. You know, basically the job was the forms from the registrar's office. You print them out. You have to change this different type of forms you have to use. So you change them out and print them out, get their jobs out. Someone will come, drop them off, pick them up. But it also included payroll.
Mm.
You know? So I was there for a good period of time. Did everything. You know, the ladies at the registrar's office, they knew me. You know, if they need something fast, you know, they would call me up. And, you know, I mean, they knew me by name, so... You know, I get their workout to them and everything else. So this one day, checks came in. I've done this many times in the past. And it was the type of print system where you know you had your perforations on the side, mm-hmm. so you had to open it up. That old system, you know, so you had to open it up and line it in.
Wow.
Get it in. So when there was a, you know, they have a check for mm-hmm. security. You know, you get it in. That's for auto work too. You know, check, make sure everything's lined up. One end line, check it again. Or, you know, if it lines up perfect. You know, you have to make your adjustments. You do, and then you just you know, start the job and get it printed up. Mm-hmm. Did my checks on the checks. Came up. Started the process. One side got loose from, you know, from the perforations. Threw the alignment off. You know, stopped it right away. I was able to, three checks in the end were affected before I was able to get back
mm-hmm.
straight. But, you know, they're all sequential order. You know, they're all together, you know, not torn apart. So when Steve came in, my boss, I told him what happened. You know, wasn't a big deal, you know. But when someone came to, you know, pick up the checks, they called him, you know, into the office. You know, this was someone, not the registrar's office, it was someone, you know, up front, you know, higher rank, you know, I guess. When he came back, you know, I just tell because he was a nice guy, you know. And I had a rapport with him. But I can just tell when he came in, just his body language and expression and his face, whatever conversation he had wasn't good. And he was even leery to speak to me about it. And basically it was, you know, they told him not to have me do checks anymore. You know, and the fact that there was going to be an audit. You know, they wanted to, you know, not that I'm going to like, audit. Because nothing's missing. You know, why is there? And he was like, you know, I just tell him, he was bothered by it too. But, and that's where that racial kind of interference came into play, you know. Where, I just knew right away, and from him, he's not just going to come out and say it, but,
mm-hmm.
but he was, I think he was more heartbroken just to even come out and tell me that, you know, because he, like I said, he was straight sure, he knew what was coming from, I knew, obviously, when he, you know, when he started saying, you know, especially when he brought up audits, so why would you have to get up bring an audit and say it's only three checks that are in order. Nothing's torn apart. So we, and the ones we're saying, well, we don't trust him and don't have him do checks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now we got all to make sure nothing was stolen. You know,
yeah.
I was taken aback by it. He was bothered by it. You know. So I continued. I still work there, but just the fact that, you know, just another experience as far as trust and everything that I didn't appreciate. So I think I ended up, I chose to leave there, and then that's when I worked at Hillcrest.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's very curious, especially since the audit wasn't customary reaction
exactly.
to it.
Yeah, even when he said it, he had that facial expression, you know, like, you know, I can't believe they're saying this, but that's what they're doing, going to do, like I stole something, you know.
Yeah. But how did you actually end up in computers? Because it says on another piece of paper that you were in business originally.
Yeah, originally when I came in, my major was computer science, you know. And then that changed, like, sophomore year, and then changed it to business. But I was still interested in computers, so I didn't want to just drop it.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured I would do, you know, both consecutive to get, you know, double major.
Mm-hmm.
But then the military science came into play, and that's like, that was as a minor, you know, but that was like working as a major.
Because,
you know, we had our classroom, and then we had our drills in the morning, and we had, you know, FTXs we had to go on. So that took a lot of time. There was a lot of things going on, so I had put too much on my plate, you know. So in the end, business was the primary, And military, of course, because you have to get commission when you graduated, which I was. And I was just shy of the computer science credits. You know, but going back to, I like to finish what I start. I just figured I'd get it done outside, but I waited too long. And that's what I was supposed to do. I know I came in, I spoke with Steve. Told me what I needed to complete the actual major for it. But I waited. I misread the student handbook, and I waited a little longer than I should have. I know it's a big deal because I had this written correspondence between me and the university as far as my completion. I had actually completed the requirements for a major.
Oh, really?
In computer science. But they said, well, now you waited too long past the date. And they told me, and I sure enough, I read the book. And they were right. I can't argue that. So I think I say, well, I've done the work.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get credit for something. So then they listed it as a minor instead of a major.
Okay, so you really didn't change disciplines that much?
No. Just one of those that wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to do when I first came in, and either change or add things to it. Not thinking that you're adding more time on, if you want to get out there reasonably. Because I actually went past the 4 years to get it all done. So,
I guess to end on a high note, do you have a favorite McCormick memory?
A favorite.
The gymnasium McCormick.
The energy of, even though I was recruited to play football, it seemed like it was a basketball school. So at that time, I don't know if it's changed over the years, but energy level was always higher at the basketball game. So just that experience, during the games and the faculty at the time, because I was always in the gym, in the weight room or something like that. So, Mr. Davidson, secretary at the time, they were always pleasant, helpful, the coaching staff. Never had an issue when the ones that stayed after, my 4 years. There were some changes with the football program as far as coaches, coach-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't, it wasn't the same coaches that recruited me to come in. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, but overall, with the school, I look at it as a learning experience. You always grow from something.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, the experience, it is what it is, look back, people just sometimes are afraid of what they don't understand or what they maybe have not experienced. I had the luxury of growing up in the city, as multicultural, being in a high school that was multicultural compared to maybe students in Iowa who maybe it's the same race.
Mm-hmm.
Or one person coming in who you probably really can't relate to or have share a different experience, especially not if you're willing. So I look at it overall as, it's just a learning experience. That made me better as a person with that experience. Sticking it out instead of leaving, made me stronger, made me better, and willing to, I still have contacts with students there, and, if they need my help with anything, I'm willing to give it. Have visited campus a few times.
Did you come to the latest homecoming?
No.
Oh, you did?
No. Last year, I believe I was there last year.
Okay, so you've seen the new Heritage Center.
I was not inside. I seen it from outside. I didn't stay for the whole festivity for the weekend. Pretty much in and out, and I was just there for a day.
Okay.
So I never had an opportunity to go inside. I was just seeing it from the outside.
Okay. But you've seen all the other buildings since then?
Not all. I do want to come back to see all of them. But pretty much I've seen the athletics facility, mm-hmm. and a little bit into the new location for the ROTC building. So everything on that side.
Okay.
No dorms or anything. So one day I'd like to come back and take a look at everything. If I had more time, I was there with my family. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you totally should. We've expanded. We've got a new soccer field.
A bunch
of new dorms in the back.
Yes, I've seen all of that. I feel slated. None of that stuff was there when I was there. Yeah. Any questions for us, community wise?
Let's see. Well. I think we've covered the community. Unless you just have a specific incident or story that you want to contribute the community.
Well, I think conflict probably became worse as the years went on. Late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived there for a little while, but after I left fighting, I came back for a short period of time, before I actually moved back to Chicago and got into my line of work. But back, I want to say maybe the early 90s, back when they racial tension with the cross burnings,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. I believe I was in Illinois, Chicago, when that happened. But I knew of people who had experiences. He was a non-student, but he lived in town. But I think he had a cross burn on his front lawn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I knew him personally. Still, when I go back, I see him from time to time. So I will still get information from various people in the community. I mean, there was a point in time where I went into law enforcement.
Mm.
And there was a time where I believe the city was trying to recruit minorities in to kind of balance things out. And I know my name was, I was approached to come in and be the police in the view.
What came of that?
No, I put some thought into it, and the person I spoke to, they told me to think about it. I had already had, 5 years of left or less in the department I was with,
mm-hmm.
And I had to kind of establish myself, but I didn't think that would have been hard sell. I had different experience just in my department.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first African American officer they had.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, so that was a different venue. But my experiences in Dubuque helped me with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just a shock. I knew how to, deal with it. It was later in my years, I didn't let things bother me. Those first 2 years were hard, but
mm-hmm.
as I adjusted. But I thought at the time there's a lot of things going on there.
Yeah.
And plus, I was looking at it from standpoint of police officers in the beat.
Mm-hmm.
Details weren't explained to me, but me coming in as an outsider in, maybe foregoing some of the testing process that what they would typically do, just to bring in a minority.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how well they would take it.
Mm.
They'll be open to it or not. So, I said it's bad enough if you have to deal with the bad element of the community, where that should be your main focus and the protection of, law-abiding citizens. But you don't want to take that. There's some animosity from coworkers
mm.
for whatever reason. you were hired. Plus, you only went to community that you already know from experience that there's racial tension. I didn't want to tackle that.
A little too much. Oh, man. Yeah, I'd probably been in the same boat as you. But we actually got our first black cop in 2012, the latter end of that year.
Yes, I have seen him.
Oh, you have?
I've never spoken with him, but I've seen him driving by.
Yeah, that was good.
So it was only, is there just one?
He didn't stay the cop for too long. He ended up leaving the department, and we got another one in 13 or early 14, and now his brother is actually in the process as well, becoming a cop. So there might be two soon.
All right, so maybe it would have been 12, because I know it was a few years. So I've been long there. So I go back over the holidays, and I know I've seen him driving by.
Yeah.
And I believe, is there also a Hispanic cop there too?
There most likely is. I mean, they would, they hired a pretty sure a few Hispanics and a good amount of women as well in the past, since like the latter part of the thousands until now.
Well, you know, from very few people that I've spoken with who are either currently in school or just, you know, recently graduated, and just from, you know, just me going to visit, you know, my little short visits. Seems like the university has come a long way. You know, at that time, I can't even think of, like I said, the amount of minority students that came in, black students were, you know, 30, 40 maybe, or less than that, you know, that first year. And I remember it was only the ones that stayed. It was five of us, I believe. Every morning.
That's insane.
Yeah.
It sounds like it would have been a very rough time.
Yeah, but you know, I have no animosity for you, things like that. But it was, I just wish that the faculty at that time would have understood or took the time to understand that what the minority students were going through, you know. They even have a, you know, they didn't even, there wasn't even a counselor, you know. But it seems like things are different out here.
Yeah. Fortunately for us.
Yes, yes. They've grown.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just.
Yeah, I'm sure I have, you know, all their things. Like I say, a lot of stuff, kind of like, you know, you put in back of your mind, and over the years when you think about it, you know, some of the things I've just stood out for that, you know, were such an impact that, you know, I still remember, but you know, I try not to harbor on negative things because it only hurts you in the long run. But yeah, and I do know now you have a students come in from a variety of cities now, compared to what it used to be.
Yeah, it's nationwide now, and it's still international wide. It's a large student body of very diverse people. It's good to see.
Yes, it's always good to see. Yeah, you can only you learn from people, right? Yeah.
I have no further questions. Unless you have something else you just want to...
No, not that I can think of.
All right, well, thank you for contributing. It's been very helpful.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.